sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
It's time to accelerate. Hey friends, this is Andy. Welcome to episode 653 of Accelerate, the sales podcast of record. And sorry, apologies if my voice sounds a little different. I've been fighting with the cold all week, or actually the last several weeks off and on. So, hey, today is Friday. It's time for another conversation with my very special co-host, Bridget Gleason. And today, Bridget and I are going to talk about the challenges associated with sales hiring. Now, this is a topic I've been covering a lot recently on the show because it's so important, right? If you want to grow your sales, you have to get the right people on board. And this is not an easy task. I mean, finding the right people requires a lot of discipline, a lot of process, and increasingly so. And we've talked about that with the guests that have been on the show. You just can't wing your way through sales interviews anymore. There's a lot of science and research done about the best ways to approach it, and we're trying to expose that information to you. And so in that spirit, today, Bridget and I are going to talk about some really excellent books that have been written recently that provide some very useful guidelines and processes for how to go about the business of recruiting, identifying, hiring, interviewing, hiring, and onboarding new sales reps. So make sure you take a listen to this. Some really good information here. If you'd like to see the show notes for this episode, go to andypaul.com/653. Now, friends, if you're a top sales performer in your current role and you're looking for a fresh challenge to take your career to the next level, then CenturyLink should be at the top of your list. With its recent acquisition of Level 3, the new CenturyLink is a world leader in providing cloud, security, real-time communications, and managed services. So if you want the excitement and the challenge, and most importantly, the rewards, both financial and psychic, that come from selling industry-leading services to the enterprise, then visit CenturyLink.com/accelerate. That's CenturyLink.com/accelerate. And join their talent community and see if a career at CenturyLink would be the right step for you. Now, finally, last note before we start with Bridget is I want to tell you about some exciting changes that I'm making to Accelerate. Now, these changes are actually going to begin next week in the first week of April. So instead of releasing three new episodes of Accelerate every week, I'm going to be consolidating those down into a single new episode each week. And these episodes will go live every Wednesday, so put that put that on your calendars. So instead of a single guest on each show, you're going to hear conversations with at least two guests per episode, sometimes three or more. And fear not, one of those conversations I'll be having every week will be with my very special co-host, Bridget Gleason, or Captain Fantastic, as loyal listeners know her. So with our current episodes averaging around 35 minutes in length, actually we're going to be running a little bit longer as we pack more goodness into each one, each episode. So you might ask, why am I making these changes? Well, after we put out 600 episodes and start closing in on 2 million downloads of Accelerate, I went out and spent some additional time talking with listeners and asking what they wanted. And interestingly, the most common feedback that I've received from my loyal listeners has been that we're still producing too many episodes for them to keep up with on a regular basis. So I believe in giving the customer what they want. As a result, we're going to go to one new show per week. It'll be bigger and better than we're currently doing. And I'll continue to have the most interesting, most educational guests to help you become even more sales ready than you are today and to help you stay relevant to your buyers in the face of this constant barrage of changes, that we all see and we experience are driven by technological innovation as well as changes in how our buyers do business. So I look forward to having you continue to join me on this journey of learning and discovery that I call Accelerate, as we provide an even bigger and better experience for you. All right, so let's jump into it today. Bridget, how are you doing?
Andy.
Hey,
you
there.
You know, mirroring is important in sales.
It is.
I'm mirroring you.
It's important in lots of relationships.
It is. And how are things this fine day? Where are you? I haven't asked you that lately. Where are you? Where in the empire? Where in the Andy Paul empire are you today?
We're in
today?
The East Coast headquarters of the vast Andy Paul media empire.
Well, the media empire does stretch, has a wide geography.
Worldwide.
It has a worldwide geography, which I appreciate.
You can hardly go anywhere on this planet
without running into you.
Without running into
and hearing you.
And hearing
you can't
Andy
get
Paul.
Away.
Exactly. Oy. Fortunately, that's not the case.
No, that's not the case.
I think I told you a story, or maybe I didn't. I was in a meeting a couple months ago, and I hadn't been introduced at the beginning. Somebody else was leading the session, and so no one really knew who I was. And then somebody spoke up in the middle of the meeting and said, "Are you Andy Paul?" Because I'd said a couple of things, and I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh." He said, "I recognize your voice from your podcast." I was like, seriously?
You do have a distinctive voice.
Which I have a hard time listening to myself, but that's normal.
Yeah, you do. You have a very distinctive, clear, resonant voice.
Maybe I should try my hand at opera.
Maybe you should.
Gosh.
Maybe you should.
It's not too late to reinvent myself yet again.
And what fun that would be.
That would be, yeah. So, yeah, no, still reinventing myself in sales, but...
That's good, too.
Yeah, and, got my training for my big bike affair coming up.
So this
is
good.
Our annual bicycle training camp.
Nice.
That my wife and I go subject ourselves to. And we could be doing these nice, cushy, guided tours in Europe. We've done those.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. Instead, we've chosen the last few years to go to these really super intense training camps where people much younger than us kick our asses over long bike rides. Actually, the terrain kicks our ass. We don't need those young people to kick our ass. The terrain kicks our ass, so... but it's fun. It's fun. It's gorgeous settings. We're back in the Central California coast, through some beautiful wine country, couple mountains, whatever. Yeah. A couple of 5,000 foot climbs, but.
Oh, boy.
Other than that, it'll be fun.
Other than that, it'll be easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that 5,000 foot mountain,
it'll be easy.
Yeah. I was showing some friends pictures I'd taken of my wife from last year's trip when she got to the summit of this one 5,000 foot peak and I was just on her back spread out in a shade tree. It was a tough climb because it was a little hot and just when you think you've gotten to the top, there's this last sort of 300 yards at a very steep incline to the summit. You come around a corner and see it. You know, you think you're done, you come around a corner, it's like, oh shoot. Yeah, that just about drove her over the edge. So,
but she's back for more.
She's back for more. That's right.
She's back for more.
Back for more. So, yeah, she's very intrepid.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, today I thought, talking about being intrepid and so on. I've read some interesting books on hiring salespeople recently. And I thought
lay them on me.
And I thought you'd like it. Maybe the audience would like it as well. Is the first one? First one's actually not really a new book. It's been around for a while, but I had not been exposed to it before. And the title is Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again. Subtitle, Selecting Candidates Who Are Absolutely Driven to Succeed. And the author is named Chris Kroner, Kroner. And it was an interesting book. It was an interesting book because it's based around this idea that you can identify those candidates that possess the quality of drive. And Chris Kroner's a clinical psychologist and has done a tremendous amount of research, both his own research and sort of summarizing research of Gallup and all these other organizations have been researching sales for almost 100 years now. And has isolated what he thinks is this quality of drive, and there's three elements to it, that the top producers have. And lays out a process in some detail about how you can identify that, what drive is, and how you can identify it in the candidates that you're looking to hire.
Interesting. Okay, let's hear. I'd like that.
Yeah, so I thought we'd spend time talking about drive because, yeah, I hadn't really conceptualized it in the way that he put it together. And so he said there are three elements of drive. And the first one is that people with drive are motivated by a need to achieve outstanding results, and they're willing to do virtually whatever it takes to succeed. So it's like this intense motivation to set tough goals or sufficiently tough goals that you maybe need to innovate in different ways in order to achieve them. You know, that you sort of force yourself to disrupt your process, but that it's the achievement itself, and this sort of speaks to the idea of, you know, are salespeople money motivated or achievement oriented, that it's this idea of achievement as one of the key elements that really create this element to drive, but that also drive salespeople. And go ahead.
Just as you're talking, I think, God, I want all my salespeople to have that.
Sure. We'd like to think they do.
But I don't think they do.
No, I don't think they do. So
I'd like, so I don't, yeah, I'd like to think they do, but I'm smart enough to know they don't.
Yes.
How's that?
So the second element of drive, so first one is a need to achieve. The second one is a love of competition, both with themselves and with others. And he writes in the book, it's interesting, when you think about it, it is true to some fair degree that, you know, a sale is viewed as a contest of wills with the customer. And I think that, yeah, I was looking back, I had never really thought about that. I was looking back sort of over the years and some of the major deals I've done and think, yeah, we both had the same goal in mind, but yeah, there's always, even with a good relationship with the buyer, there's always an element of sort of, I don't know, adversarial nature there to some degree that never completely goes away, no matter how much you're on the same page with the buyer. But anyway, this idea is, you know, again, people who have drive love to compete both with themselves and others.
Are there others?
And then the third one is...
I'm going to say, I want how many are there?
Three.
All right. All right.
A need to achieve, love to compete.
Loves to compete.
Third one is they're optimistic. They're certain of their ability to win.
Okay.
And so I read that and I sat back and thought about it and thought, I've got that. I mean,
that is where we go first, isn't it? I mean, the first thing as I was thinking, do I need to achieve? Yeah, that's me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's never, for me, it's never led with money. I was having this discussion with somebody yesterday. It's like, I mean, the money's important, right? I mean, I'm never going to say it's not important, but it's never at the forefront of my mind. It's achieving results is important because I know if I achieve the results, then the money's going to come. I love to compete as by virtue of the fact that not just competing in business, but, you know, I still compete, you know, personally in athletic things. That's still important to me to have that element of competition. When I'm in the swimming pool doing master swimming, I love to compete with the younger people. On the bike, my wife sometimes has a hard time riding with me because I'm always sort of like, if somebody passes me, I want to go compete with them when we're riding. Somebody goes by me, it's like, oh yeah, I want to go ride with that person. So the competition is there. And I am an optimist.
Yeah, I'm definitely that. I don't have the same competitive, maybe I used to, but I've had to, I think because I'm so competitive that I have to be really intentional about hobbies. Because I can just get too, like when I was learning to play golf, there was a period of time when I couldn't keep score. I just had to reduce my own stress I had to do better than I did last time. It wasn't necessarily against anyone else, but just me getting better and improvement. I think that resonates more with for me than any of the others. Competing with others.
Yeah, I mean, I've got that too. I mean, I was bragging to my wife last night as I set a new personal record for the amount of watts I pushed on our Peloton bike over an hour period. Setting PRs. That's like, yay! I come out of our room where the bike is. Yeah, I just set a PR an hour.
And was she?
She rolled her eyes. Yeah. She tolerates me that way. That's very nice of her.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's just sort of my natural instinct. These days, I don't feel like I'm competing against others as much as competing against myself in business. You know, things I'm trying to do with my business, I don't view other people as competitors. I've met the enemy and he is me. I'm competing with myself at all the times. But I think I agreed. I thought that summary of good salespeople, and I just wasn't using myself as an example. I sat back and thought of the top producers that had worked with me over the years, either people that I had seen when I was younger in my career who are more senior, bosses I respected, and they all had that.
Yeah, and I think the optimism, the number three, is a really important one.
Yeah, interesting. I had a conversation with somebody just recently, a woman named Libby Gill, who's written a new book that's coming out shortly called... what's it called? The Hope-Driven Leader, Harnessing the Power of Positivity at Work. And she was advocating that really what I think Chris Kroner is talking about in his book is optimism, is really hopefulness. And there's apparently, I didn't realize, there's a whole science that's sprung up around this idea of hope and positivity and there's like a theory of hope that exists. But the difference between optimism and hope is basically hope is optimism with a plan. So hope is a belief. Hope is a belief with an expectation or a plan to it that, you know, there's steps you're going to take to achieve what you hope to achieve.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. So I told her, I said, yeah, Libby, it sounds to me like optimism with a plan. And she sort of laughed and she didn't tell me to shut up. So I figured I was onto something there. So maybe the third element is more hopefulness. But anyway, you know, it's the, as Chris Cronin talked about in his book, is, you know, this ability to succeed and the desire to succeed, you know, have to be matched by the belief that you can succeed. And that's absolutely true. I mean, you can be as competitive as you want, but if you don't believe that you're going to win, then your odds of winning are go down.
Definitely.
So he puts out in his book, they've got this, his company sells a off-the-shelf sales assessment that you can use to test for drive. And I thought, yeah, that could be interesting for some companies. If these are qualities, his company is called Sales Drive, not surprisingly. I urge people to check that out. I mean, I'm a huge fan of using assessments as a data point.
Definitely.
During your hiring process. And as opposed to sort of the conventional sales aptitude, sales personality tests, you might try this one because it might give you a different, better result.
What is the assessment? Where does one find it?
I believe it's at salesdrive.com.
Salesdrive.com. God, if only it would be so easy. Like, I'd like to believe that I could give somebody an assessment and that would solve my hiring issues.
It won't.
Wouldn't that be great?
It won't.
Thank you.
Well, thank so that's you. Our leads to the next book that we read, which I read was written by a gentleman named Jeff Hyman. And this book is titled Recruit Rockstars, the 10-step playbook to find the winners and ignite your business. And I'm not a huge fan of the title with about the whole rockstars thing, but it's a really good book though. Other than the title, it's a really good book. Interviewing Jeff to be on the show and sort of gave him a hard time about that. But what he talks about is similar to a process that I've advocated for a long time about a data-driven process that you have for hiring that its intent is to mitigate the impact of the emotion in the decision-making and the hiring process. And so some of the key things he talks about, he goes in some better detail than I had in my own process, and I told him I was going to steal them. But as one as you sort of start with this idea is you've got a scorecard. So before you're interviewing people, as you're creating a scorecard, and you have these various criteria that you're going to score. And that then becomes your data at the end of your process that you use to make a decision. And you know, some of the things that he advocates, which is something I, again, have been advocating for a while with customers as well, is, for instance, like when you do interviews. You know, right now, the way most companies interview is, yeah, we'll bring somebody in, they'll talk to three or four people, we'll get together at the end, and we'll sort of compare notes. Really what the state of the art is that, yeah, you may have three or four people interview, but they're all going to ask the exact same questions in the exact same order. No freelancing, no weak questions. And Jeff, in his book, has a series of questions you can ask for standard interviews, which make it valuable. You can adapt some of those to your purposes. But then you actually then, when you do that, you have a standard framework with which to discuss the candidate. And yeah, everybody scores the candidate based on the answers they gave to each of the questions. And so, the interview block has a score. The assessments you give them have a score. Obviously, you're going to test, if you're listening to this and you're hiring and you're not testing people on the skills and that they need to have to do the job, then you're not doing a complete interview. So it could be a written test. It could be testing the writing skills. It could be a test of their technical knowledge. It could be a test of their ability to do an impromptu presentation. Whatever works and is required for your firm, that's what you have to do. That's what you have to do. And that, again, is an element that you score. And then obviously reference checks. You're going to score those. Of course, you could do... I'm not sure Jeff and I were in complete alignment in terms of when you do reference checks. I mean, I believe you do reference checks before you do interviews. He believes you do, at a minimum, you do your backdoor reference checks before the interview. But regardless, I mean, it's still important to do some level of reference checking at a minimum before they come in at the interview, because reference checks are not meant to be validations of decisions that are already made. They're meant to be disqualifiers.
Right.
Unfortunately, yeah. Most people use them as validation for decisions they've already made.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can go waste a lot of people's time when somebody comes in and there's no need to do a reference check because they don't pass that first level of qualification. So I usually do them somewhere in the middle. I think a reference check, a back channel, just, I don't really call it a reference check, just sort of a gut check. Do you know this person? What would you say?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and you've talked about that before. Very early on, we had talked about hiring. That's really important. And so what you want to do is, and also the other point that Jeff made about, the author of the book, Jeff Hyman, made about interviewing is that, you may have three or four people that do the standard interview questions, same questions everybody asks in the same order, is then you also have one person who does the deep dive on the background, on the resume. And typically that might be the hiring manager, right? It doesn't mean the hiring manager won't also then ask the standard questions in the same order, but one person has to be assigned to do the deep dive. But the point is, this is all in a process. And what I believe is that you have various disqualifying steps along the way. So I will judge a resume. I'll give a score to a resume just on appearance, because I think that sales is an incredible business for attention to detail is really important. And if someone can't be bothered, and also first impressions are important. And so if someone doesn't have the instinct to create a positive first impression, yeah, they're no good to me.
They're dead to you?
They're no good to me. Were they dead to me? That depends. But
they're dead to me.
But I'll disqualify right at that point. But let's say it's okay, and then another preliminary score I'll put on a scorecard is, if we make the decision to do a screening interview, how's the screening interview go? And oftentimes, various people have various opinions about this. I believe that you don't necessarily need the hiring manager to do the screening interview, and probably sometimes maybe not even desirable. Because it's just short, this person done the research, are they feasible, just with the basic questions you're asking to take to the next step. To me, the next part of the process is then we're going to assess, we're going to test, and we're going to go through all that before I make the decision to bring them in for an interview. And we'll do in my case, I recommend that you do the reference checks before you make that decision too, but at a minimum, do the back channel reference check. So yeah, it's a very interesting book, very well written. I recommend people check it out.
I will definitely do it. I do a lot of hiring, so I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I would say from a sort of practical day-to-day thing, Jeff's book, Recruit Rockstars, is a very, very handy reference. And I think Chris Kroner's book about Drive, but Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again. Again, one well worth reading if you're a hiring manager. It does a good job laying out what successful people look like. And a lot of research behind it. So well worth sort of digging into that as well.
On my list.
All right. For your next trip.
For my next trip.
All right.
Sounds great. As always.
As always. So friends, thank you for joining us. Bridget, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Until the next time, Andy.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.